This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 820, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who aren't invading anyone, who are just not making it worse.
I've come down with something. I'm frozen, tied up, cast in.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 820. Welcome, I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And of course, our tertiary host who shows up relatively regularly, Ryan Haupt.
Ooh, I like tertiary. Good use of the word tertiary.
Love that word.
Happy to be here.
This is a tertiary Helmsworth. We are iFanboy.
Well, I don't like that comparison. I reject that comparison.
I can't remember the tertiary Hemsworth name. Did I say Helmsworth or Hemsworth?
Hemsworth.
Okay, so there's Chris, and there's Liam, and then there's...
He's on Westworld. He's on Westworld. I know what he looks like.
Yes, yeah, he was the security guard guy.
Yep, but I don't want it.
What's interesting about the Hemsworths is that they drop in attractiveness considerably.
Oh, wow. All right, geez.
No, they're like Wahlbergs.
It's Luke Hemsworth.
There you go. Yep. They're like Wahlbergs. You got Marky, and then you got Donnie, and then you got that other guy. I was watching something. I think it was The Departed, and there was a scene. I go, "Hey, that guy's a Wahlberg," but he was like a working class, dumpy looking Wahlberg.
What is happening?
Sorry,
doing your show.
I was trying to make you guys laugh.
A glass houses situation.
Listen, I'm not. this isn't a like look down at. This is he's like me. We're iFanboy. Every week, one of us picks the book they liked. Yeah, you don't want to get airs on, you know what I mean? And Chris Hemsworth is extremely handsome. Can we just agree on that?
I think all of them are.
None of them are bad-looking dudes.
Yeah.
Right, but in comparison,
that's where you get in trouble. Yeah. I think Luke is older than Chris. I don't know. I'm confused by your...
I don't think it is.
This is why the show goes long.
I'm confused by your assertion of first. First in your scale of attractiveness, I don't think is their birth order or age or any of that.
It's only attractiveness. And again, this is a subjective.
Nobody's opinion. Here is saying Chris Hemsworth is not handsome.
How many?
I don't think that's the question at all. I think he's talking about Luke, and it doesn't matter.
Everyone knows we're talking about Luke, and that's the problem.
I don't think Luke's listening, and I don't think that he would argue with it because
I think Luke might say that he might say I care.
I'm pretty sure. Any one of these guys could take any one of us and break us in half like a stick.
Oh, absolutely. So. Any person from the island of Australia is tougher than me by default.
The question is, would we like it?
The question is, how many listeners have we lost?
Is it too early to start drinking? What is
happening? If this is your first episode, welcome.
I think that longtime people right now are like, oh man, this is a bonus. This doesn't need to be degraded until much later. All right, I'm not going to say a different thing. I'm going to go right through the part, and we'll talk about comics. We are a fanboy. Right. Every week, one of us picks the pick.
Oh, you couldn't even get through one line.
I know. It's because I'm not handsome enough. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics, and we call that the pick of the week. So if you had three Hemsworths, you would probably pick Chris. We talk, or Mark, if you had three Walmart.
If one is Luke Hemsworth.
Yeah, right, that's right. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. We talk about patron pick. Connor's acting like these people are part of his social circle. Like, listen, I can't.
I just think there's no reason to be mean. But go.
Nobody's being mean.
Who's being mean?
You said he's the unattractive brother.
The least attractive of three attractive men.
Oh, that's like what's the third best pizza in New York? It's pretty fucking good pizza.
It's mean to the pizza.
They're famous people who make money.
Go.
And their lives are better than mine by orders of magnitude.
I'm so tired. Let's just keep going.
We're going to talk.
He's on a show written by the second best Nolan writer.
Oh my God. Let's talk about Zach Whedon, who has ascended in the order. We will talk about, oh God, I hate Dave Franco. We talk about the patron pick. We answer some listener mail if we have time. The world is a smoldering shithole right now. Like, I listen to the news and it's terrible. And this is an escape for us. I hope it is for you. Everything that happened before was some bullshit. And if I can promise you anything, that we will add some more bullshit to the bottom of this. And for an hour, 15 minutes, it'll be a good time. 50 minutes, we're lucky. Here's your spoiler warning. Ryan, you had the pick this week. Thank God.
I did have the pick, and I enjoyed reading my comics this week. And the pick that I chose is Captain Carter, story by Jamie McKelvey, arc by Marika Cresta, colors by Eric Arsenega. No idea.
Arsenega.
I feel like you'd be the guy who'd get that name right.
I know. I feel my mouth's fumbled. Arsenega. And this was a really, it's an issue one, and they don't label it as a what if, but it is, as far as I can tell.
It's an Elseworlds.
Elseworlds. But I mean, this basically could be the sequel issue to the Captain Carter episode of the TV show, the cartoon show on Disney Plus. I thought it was really fun. So it's sort of, the Captain Carter episode, if you ignore the cross-dimensional crossover that the series ended with, if you just take her episode, this is basically her Steve Rogers story. If she ended up getting frozen and then thawed out in... It seems like they're going for straight down the line, like 2020, 2022, our modern time. And she goes back to London and she's just trying to get by in London. The government is interested in her and what she can do. The prime minister seems like an absolute sleazeball. There's a S.H.I.E.L.D.-like entity known as Strike. There's some good Marvel cameos where you can see how the world is different because she never... the world is different because of whatever, but like part of it is her return, and it looks like she's going to put the uniform back on to take on some Hydra thugs and have adventures in the modern world similar to Steve, but with kind of a cool British twist. And I thought McKelvey, famous for his artistic abilities, did a really solid job writing this book. What'd you guys think?
Overall, I liked it. There were some problems. I thought the art was really inconsistent from Marika Cresta. The faces were all over the map. And then I don't know if you should start an issue after the initial cold open with two back-to-back government meetings, but it's not the most exciting way to start an issue. But overall, once it got into the action, once it got into Peggy being out in the world, I liked it. I mean, she's a great character, and I love Elseworld stuff, so that was fun. I don't know why she's not called Captain Britain, other than that alliteration. But
Captain Britain thing, and is that part of the X-Men universe? And I don't know.
Well, Captain Britain is just a character, and
trademark rules though. Like whoever owned, I mean, I guess they're all owned by Disney now. But
yeah, they're all Marvel characters. She's a Marvel character. I mean, the Captain Britain character is in the book, Elizabeth Braddock. But like.
Right.
I thought that too for What If. I was like, why isn't she just called Captain Britain? But anyway, overall, I thought it was fun once I got past the opening. And, the art is inconsistent, but, otherwise, okay. So I thought this was fun overall.
I was hit by, and Connor said the government meetings, right away I was hit by walls of text on many pages. And I was like, what the hell is this? as you're starting a story. And that really bothered me. I thought that seems like a kind of a rookie move. And you know, Jamie's not a rookie. And it happened many, many pages. Like, you could sort of flip through it and you can just see pages covered in text, diary form, conversations that go on and on. It's just people sitting in chairs and talking. And I don't think that makes a very good first issue of a superhero series. Now,
this is a miniseries, by the way, just FYI.
Whatever.
I'm just letting everybody know it's a five issue miniseries.
That said, I thought the art was okay. I think inconsistent is probably a good way to put it, but it felt like it wasn't quite there. And I felt that was a combination between the coloring. You know, Arseniega, it's a name I've seen before, but there are bits of it that just look a little unnatural, a little Photoshoppy. Undercooked, we'll say. I just think structurally, it read more like a novel. I think that the characterizations and the dialogue and the text of what I was reading was very good. I thought, you know, like, all these characters, I understand them. I think their voices are very clear. The Prime Minister's maybe a little bit on the nose. I liked, you know, the neighbor. I liked, is it Betsy Braddock? She's Betsy, Elizabeth Braddock.
Yeah, Elizabeth,
right?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying, and I was like, I'm not sure if that's right. And I think that the dialogue, the voices coming out of all the people were, especially Captain Carter, were great. Once it got started and into the place in the world, but it was really top heavy in the beginning.
So the conversations that happened at the beginning of the book, I thought it was interesting. I actually thought it was interesting that, like, when it's Captain America, he was, you know, it's an American super soldier with the American made using a German scientist super soldier serum. And I actually kind of liked the West Winginess of the weird debate that, like, where does she go now that she's thawed out?
Yeah.
Because, like, is she American? She was in, like, an American plane. She got an American serum, but is she a British citizen? Like, where, you know, it's Russian territory as
but
claimed.
That's the first five pages of the book.
But it worked for me. Like, for whatever reason.
I thought it read fine. It was interesting, but I have a visceral thing to, like, start a comic book and then look and just see tons of word balloons
and so do I
on a table.
And it
got me. Now, once I got over that and I read it, I was like, this is really interesting. But then there were more of those, because sometimes you have to do it. Structurally, I think it was a problem. The content, the plot, the story, the characters, those were all strong. I just think it should have been reevaluated. To just look at, like, if you laid all the pages out in the beginning, you go, we got to move some of this stuff around. That's what I thought.
The action sequence was really strong, and when she's riding the bus and Hydra attacks, and that was all really well done. It was a nice. I'm scrolling through it now, and it's spare. There's not a ton of panels. It's exciting. That was probably the highlight of the issue, as well as the neighbor stuff was good.
And I sound like I don't like it. I did. I enjoyed it. And like, more than I thought, like, based on, I want to like it. I like Jamie McKelvey a lot. And so I was rooting for it. And like, just sort of visually and structurally, those first couple of things really got me. Like, it just caught me off guard, and I had to sort of push through it. And when I did, like I said, I was really interested in what I was reading. By the end, you know, I want to know what happens. I like the character. I like that I can hear the actress whose name is
Hayley Atwell,
who might be one of the most beautiful people on earth. In fact,
you're on record with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, and
I've thought
that since Pillars of the Earth, if you want to go way back. And I remember one time a guy that we know who works at Marvel years ago was at something with her, like right at the beginning, like Captain America period. And he was next to her at like some panel thing. And I was like, you're sitting next to Hayley Atwell. And he said to me, he's like, she might be the most beautiful human I've ever seen in real life. And it sticks with me, 'cause I was like, yeah, I had that thought about her, but she, like, it's her here and not in a bad way. Like, I'm not looking at bad photo referenced, but you can, that character and that actor comes through in here, which I think
the voice is very clear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way that I thought was fun.
Yeah, I mean, as a miniseries, as a Elseworlds, you know, it's fun. It's Captain Carter and her sidekick Elizabeth Braddock, who is not Captain Britain in this.
Or neither is
Captain Carter.
Psylocke, right?
Yeah.
Well, she started off as Captain as Captain Britain's sister, got merged with Psylocke, and now she's Captain. It's all, you know, it's Marvel.
Yeah, that is messed up. Psylocke used to be Asian.
Well, she was mind transferred.
She was the mind of Elizabeth Braddock in the body of an Asian woman. And then they got separated out.
Was that Claremont?
I probably.
Because that's some psychosexual shit that he's working through there.
It's all psychosexual
shit. Yeah, I know. But Claremont's very obvious.
Yeah.
I'm glad Peggy got to experience tacos, but also those are London tacos.
Good point.
I was thinking that. I was like, are we going to go with that as the thing she's really excited about?
I got to say, if you are a woman who went out in 1940s Britain, it might be too much to immediately go to Mexican tacos. It might be a good thing that like a London taco is like, oh, this is interesting. Because if you throw them in too far, it just would be too much.
Yeah. But again, it also all depends on who's running. Like Mike Romo and I were in Germany once and stumbled upon this place that was all Mexican expats. And it was terrific. Mm-hmm. It was legitimate.
I mean, it's different
tacos,
now than it used to be.
Yeah, they've got a mariachi guy, but his guitar is very small for a mariachi style guitar. And I have heard
ukulele style.
I have heard British people refer to black pepper as spicy.
One of the worst meals I ever had in my life was I think it was Italian food in Ireland. It was horrendous.
This is going to be a 4-hour show.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying we got a lot in the rundown. I'm happy to talk about international foods.
No, we can only talk about foods from when we've been out of the country and had other styles of food from the country.
I'm happy to talk about the Chinese food I had in Mississippi. That was the worst thing I've ever had in my life.
I went to a German place in Panama that was fantastic.
Guys, tertiary cuisine.
It's almost like we're participating in international espionage.
What we're doing is making ourselves sound much more continental than we are. Certainly myself. You two are a little more continental than I am. Certainly Ryan. Well, I'm not. When I say I had this in Ireland, I never went anywhere else. I just went to Ireland.
Speaking
You've
of...
been to London a lot.
Hey.
Been to London a lot.
Focus up. Speaking of people who need to stop it, our next book, King of Spies, number 4, story by Mark Miller, Matteo Scalera, does the art, refuses to stop, cannot be stopped.
This is the final issue of this miniseries, and I think this could have been a really great miniseries.
I really struggled with it because I wanted to like it, and it felt like something was just off.
I think there's a couple of problems here. Number one, it's too short.
Yeah,
four issues really felt more like an outline than a full meaty story. And two, I've said this before. I think it was when we first talked about the miniseries in general was that. I think it's a much stronger story if he removes the fantastical elements. I guess they are fantastical, but, you know, there was no need for these, were they Brazilian assassins who he maimed when they were young, so one has no arm, one has no legs, and they're tied together as one person. It's very Rick Remender-y. Like, there's no need for them. They didn't affect the story one way or another. They showed up, and he killed them immediately, and it's just like, if they had grounded this story much more, then I think you have a really compelling... which is basically old man James Bond who's dying of cancer decides to right the wrongs that he helped perpetuate through his career, take out all the people he was never allowed to, the politicians, the really rich guys. It's a really compelling story when you just look at it that way. But then there's, you know, in the beginning he's like jumping off buildings and landing and he's fine. Like it's just ground it.
Yeah.
And it's really compelling. But
the parts of the story that I thought worked best for me were the really human parts where he is with the woman that, you know,
that was a terrific scene.
That was a great scene. Like that was, it almost made it pick of the week. It was so good.
It was one of the best scenes of the week where he goes back, he needs help. He finds this woman that he knew when he was younger who was an asset basically. And he slept with her, of course. And so they're going to have sex again, and it's intercut with them as young people having very vigorous young people sex. And then now they're in their late 60s and he can't get an erection and it's his blood pressure. And it's all being intercut. And it was a very sort of emotional and real human situation. And the juxtaposition of them as young people and as old people.
And her
powerful.
The fact that she's lived a life without him and he's the one who hasn't really moved on. And so like his feeling a failure in their moment of coitus where he can't perform. Like, it hurts him more than it hurts her in a way where she's very kind to him and like just offers to be there with him. And I thought it was actually like a beautiful human moment that you'd never get in the James Bond stories. That is a very logical progression of like where those characters would go after the events of, you know, the movie. I really, really liked that scene.
It's just this, I think like this is a mini series of missed opportunity. Like when I heard the pitch, I was like, oh, that's a really good pitch. And then it was like, here's the outline for the Netflix series, because these are all owned by Netflix. All of Mark Miller's books are owned by Netflix. And not really a ton of meat where there could have been. And then there's just no, just ground it. Yeah. Just ground it.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful and great action sequences. And I still liked reading it. I still had fun reading it. But every issue I'd go, man, that was so close to being great.
Yep. That's kind of where I was at with it, too.
Yeah. Which is a bummer.
It was a bummer.
But I did like it.
What is it with stories about Britain, whenever there's somebody who's like rebellious or trying to bring down the system, the story has to end with blowing up Parliament.
It's a simple.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's an American equivalent of that.
It's the Capitol building. We already had that problem.
Well, yeah.
I don't know how it happened, but Bruno Redondo did 2 comics this month.
He makes good comics.
That's like some old school shit. That's some old Kirby shit. Like that, I was surprised to see that Bruno Redondo did the art for Superman Son of Kal-El number 9, the second part of the 2-part Nightwing Superman crossover, Superboy crossover. But strangely, it doesn't really end in a way that makes you feel like you got a 2-part crossover. It feels like the story's going to keep going. Which
that was the end of it.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Yes.
There were some amazing moments in this book. Amazing is probably not the right word, but I read it and I just thought, like, I don't know that I like all of the things that are going on here, but Taylor has such a read on these two characters, and Connor, you keep being like, I don't like this John Kent. I was like, I really like the way he writes this John Kent. Like, and the way that, you know, Dick was there for him. I don't know. It's a Big Brother character, and it's hard not to like him. When I always think of one of my favorite Big Brother characters, this is Nishi, is David Krumholtz in Freaks and Geeks. He came back and he told Sam Levine, like, because they had the dad who cheated on them, or cheated on the mother, you know, and it was like he showed up for that one episode. And I always think of that. And this is another one of those great Big Brother characters. But then Lois is also there for it, mm-hmm. you know, and they sort of like they have this low grade emotional team up. Yeah. You know, and then there's a reveal that when John was gone, he had been actually imprisoned in the volcano, and he's like,
which we knew.
We knew.
I know that, but he told it to Dick. He's never told anybody that. That's the point. Which I thought was an interesting call. I like Dick says something about this time, and he's like, it's like Damien, how you and I are the only two people who like him, and I was like, that's awesome. You know. Yeah, that was
I think my favorite sequence was when they drop Dick off the roof, and it cuts to
Yes.
Him falling comfortably with John flying upward, and then John tosses the scrim stick, and I'm such a huge fan of Dick's armpit flaps.
Oh, his flying squirrel.
Yeah. It's so great.
100%. No, that page turn in that top panel was brilliant. It was
so good. That, it says Bruno Redondo, so much about both characters in that moment.
And Bruno Redondo I liked him before, but I look.
He's really, really, really.
We've seen all that through Nightwing, but that's amazing. I mean, I don't even love his art style per se all that much, but his graphic design and his storytelling makes up for it. Like I don't even now I'm like, oh no, it's all great. But that was brilliant.
And Dick's Comics Code Authority T-shirt.
They're being very. Mr. Miracle with his outfits, where he and Barbara are constantly wearing superhero t-shirts, which I'm fine with, but that was a gag in Mr. Miracle that they're doing
it,
here.
I think it only works if the person doing it's really good. Like it could be, but really
also
bad.
For the character, Dick has been around from the beginning,
and he's a little over the he has no ego about it, I guess.
Right? Yeah, and I feel like Barbara does it for Dick.
I feel like the thing
I made up a whole story in my head. I've got a whole backstory for them.
I've
got a whole thing going on. In my head, the book is just about the two of them, and that's fine.
I think Dick is like the most comfortable person in the DC universe.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
He's here to have a good time. He's here for a good time, not a long time, and he's fine with it.
He's comfortable in his own skin. He's comfortable in his role. He's comfortable around everyone.
But it's also not he's still very committed to the right thing also.
Yeah.
Like he's like, well, this is the thing we have to do. I'm not going to stress over it, you know. He stresses way more over the $1 billion thing or the, whatever, however much it was.
Yeah.
And doing that the right way than he is about the superhero parts. He's ultimately calm in the fights and the whatever. And also what's interesting about it is that it's not a put on. Like like Spider-Man's is a put on. It's I act this way so that I'm not stressed out by it. And over years he became more comfortable, but that's still part of it. Like Dick Grayson's thing, he's like, I've been there, I've done this. You guys are all lame. I'm not worried about any of you. And I have my fucking logo on the bottom of my soles of my boots. So what are you gonna do?
That was a nice touch. I noticed that.
I don't think I've ever seen a Dick Grayson Lois Lane hangout scene before.
That's great.
They were drawn a little too close to the same age, I felt like.
Well,
yeah.
How old he is I mean, again, if you start plumbing the depths of this, you end up in a lot of trouble.
it unravels quickly.
Yeah, yeah, because if he's an adult, let's say he's, you know, he's not in his 20s, he's got to be a 30-ish year old.
No, he's in his 20s.
No.
Yeah. If you look at page, 60, I don't know. Like I feel like he's
in his
young
late
adult
20s.
Thing.
No,
late 20s. That's fine. Late 20s,
nah,
early 30s, that area.
No.
Yeah.
And then
she's got to be early 40s.
She'd have to be.
Again, these are all late 30s? They de-aged everybody. These characters are younger than you think they are. The main guys are in their 30s. They were going to make them older, and they didn't do it. The main people are in their 30s. The psychics are in their 20s. The younger psychics are in their teens.
I think that when we were kids, things that were in their early mid 30s seemed old, and now early 40s.
That's just because of your age, and you're implying your age.
I know that
Superman was always 29 when we were growing up. That was the established age in the comics.
But the people making these are our age, and I think
it doesn't matter. It's
irrelevant.
Superman was always 29. They aged him up into his 30s. Batman was 33. That's the age the characters are.
That's way too young.
Because you're older.
No.
But the characters are, that's what they
are.
But
also, we're living in the era of, John Wick and Taken, where, old dudes can still be action stars, so.
Of course they can,
John Kent is, okay, we'll say he's 13.
No.
He's an age, Jonathan Kent, the one in this comic?
Yes.
He's no, like they,
remember he got,
16,
he got
17.
Age,
I know,
he got
how
age
old
forward
was
17.
He when, I, right.
He was like
how
10 when he
in
went
time.
Away. Well, it's your favorite thing. It's relativistic. There's been
relativity
has occurred.
I'm talking about the time from when Lois had him as a baby to now is how many years?
Again, you just told Ryan not to do this.
He's
because
aged,
it doesn't
know,
make any
but
sense.
He's aged
you, but
more.
That's why,
but,
Connor, you are positive about the things like this, but it doesn't make any sense if you do that. But
no,
that's,
but also,
that's
exactly.
Why,
it doesn't make sense.
You're Josh,
it's comic logic.
In the interstellar way,
so there can be no
constants. Jonathan Kent has aged more years in his life than Lois Lane has aged since she had him.
I know. I'm not.
But you're asking
talking
how old,
about that.
So I can't get. So when you say how many years have passed, it's different for the different characters.
I want to know what age she became a mother in this, while also being an internationally renowned journalist.
She's the same age. She hasn't aged. That's how comics work.
That's insane.
Yes, that's how it works. That's how it's always worked.
It's not working.
Well,
they live in stasis. Things happen. Dick Grayson aged from 8 years old to 30. That would be Batman in his 60s. But that's not how it works.
That's just your
because it's comics.
Opinion.
Everyone stays the same age.
I only considered a Batman to be say 10, 12, 10, 13 years older than Dick. Does that seem right?
So if you have him, so that means then he is in his almost 50, which is not the case. That's again, you can't apply any of this stuff. The comic characters don't age no matter how old they don't.
It doesn't
don't.
Matter.
Because also,
what you're saying is not objective fact. It's what you used to be.
No, it is objective fact. Because Superman was 29 years old for the entire run of his Silver Age because it didn't matter what happened to him or how many years he had a relationship. He stayed the same age. They don't age. Characters don't age.
It's also the
thing
that
no one at DC
who's
saying
that that's the rule, you are. If Bruce Wayne was really a person at 50, he would be just as good at being Batman because that's the character. It doesn't matter how old he is.
You guys want them to age with you, but they don't. They stay the same age no matter what happens to them. That's how the rule in comics. That's how they live for 80 years.
That's just your woke bias tainting my comics. I don't want politics in my comics, Connor. I don't want aging up and down of people. Just want.
I did say as soon as, and I fell into the trap, but at the beginning I said as soon as you start to examine, and look what happened.
Yes, exactly.
look what happened. Now either people at home are clapping or they're super uncomfortable. Or some combination of the two. That's how I feel. I'm like, this is amazing. I want it to stop.
Superman is whatever age I was when you guys met me.
Ugh. It was a great issue. It was a wonderful issue. Despite many of the things that I don't think I like about the overall thing they're doing, this it shouldn't go on forever, but you know, they've really given us some nice moments between these two books that the same guy is writing, and Bruno Redondo is a fucking craftsman. Oh man, also inked by Wade Von Grawbadger. That's just quality. That's good stuff right there.
Thor, I finished reading Thor 749, and I mean, it's all good, but I think my problem is, for the last decade plus, every Thor story has been rocking the foundations of Thor, and it just gets exhausting.
Well, I think that also, like, when Jason Aaron did it, it was one big thing.
It was a soap opera.
And he brought it to, and it was an epic. He brought it to a conclusion, and then everybody else was like, we'll do it too. And I was like, no, you did that. You got to do a different thing.
I mean, the stories are all good, but like, it's like every, and I think this is a consequence of the way comics are made. They're not Claremontian or Wolfmanian soap operas anymore. They're static trade stories. So each one is sort of lives on its own. And every Thor story is Mjolnir isn't what you think it is. Donald Blake isn't what you think it is. Odin isn't who he thinks. It's just like every story is just, and after a while, it's like, it doesn't hit the same way when it's just every arc is taking Thor
what's confusing
apart.
About that, and you're not wrong, but what's confusing about it is it's really, from a craftsman standpoint,
no, they're good. This is
really
a good issue.
Well.
Right. It's really, yeah, no, totally. It's a good looking book.
I first page right away, I went, who the hell's this? And it's Nick Klein, who's drawn it before, but like he did something. I know, but like it's the first bit is like sketchy.
It's a
flashback, so they make it look different.
I know, but draw like that, that's awesome.
Yeah, it looked really good.
I was so like that. First page, or not first page, I want to say page
sequence.
Two.
The first sequence.
Yeah, but
I mean, that first sequence, like, that's an artist that Rick Remender snatches up.
Oh my God, it made me so happy. I was like, oh, this is, I can't compare it. Like, it gave me a feeling about a time. Like, the way that he did the faces that were kind of overwrought, it was, you know, and it's how he's learning how to catch Mjolnir. And I was like, I've never seen this. This is, how have I not seen this? You know, and the rest of it was great, but God, that pencil-y stuff at the beginning, I was way into it. And I think you're absolutely right, Connor. Like, I don't buy the thing about Mjolnir being an evil demon thing who's inside the hand. Yeah. I don't buy it. I just don't. I don't like it. It's not good. I don't like that. They won't just return to start.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you did the story. Go back to start. Give him his hammer. He's the one who can pick it up. If he's King of Asgard now, fine. Let him be fucking Thor for a while.
Right,
like I mean, they
take everything about Thor and it's undermining Thor's heroism.
I don't want imposter syndrome, Gen X. Where do I belong, Thor? Anymore? Yeah. I don't want it. He's fucking Thor. I don't want to understand. I don't want to know that Odin had doubts and that's why he's been an asshole all this time. Right. Odin's an asshole because he's fucking Odin and he gets to be an asshole. Thor likes to drink and cavort. And he's good with a big hammer. This is us on and on.
In a lot of post-coital Thor situations.
It's like Thor cannot get over his impotence. And he keeps going to therapists. And he keeps having issues. That isn't... I don't need to live out my middle age through Thor. You know what I mean? And I'm not
also,
impotent.
I mean, there's...
Just to be clear.
That was the most like male thing I've ever done. I just want everyone to know I can still get erections. That's not why I'm upset.
He keeps going to different therapists, and none of the therapists will just be like, "Dude, your dad was an asshole. Let it go. Yeah. Like, stop trying with him and try with everyone else in your life, and you'll be okay."
But they keep hinting towards that. Like, he's like, "Old man, forget it." And then Odin gets Odin is then becoming. I'll go inside. Like, I got daddy issues, but Odin is constantly used to work out this daddy issue that isn't interesting anymore. Like, let him be an asshole. And because it was what happens, the writers keep bringing him back and like they're showing his human side that he was too afraid to talk about it forever. And like, he's not a 50s dad. He's the king of all gods.
He's a 1550s dad.
Yeah. Like, he's not he's not like your dad who fought
even
your grandfather
too
fought
modern.
In, you know, Vietnam. And is finally opening up now about all his feelings. He's not that. He's the guy who would have never said shit about shit.
Yeah. I did like, I don't know if we've ever seen Thor go through Odin's sleep before, and I thought that was kind of cool.
No.
I like that.
He's not been the king before.
Has he never had the Odin Force before?
Odin had the Odin Force.
I assumed that at some point there had been a story where Thor had been given the Odin Force, and I just hadn't read
Not that I'm aware. I haven't read every Thor comic.
Okay, that's a new idea. Credit where
it still irks me that, I mean, these are new things. The point is, like, it's the same theme through all of them. It's this foundational element of Thor breaks. Donald Blake breaks. Mjolnir physically breaks. Odin breaks.
Many times.
Asgard breaks. It's just the same.
The Beta Ray Bill's hammer broke.
Yeah, it's the same story over and over again, told really, really well.
Yeah, that's the hard, like, if you listen to this, like, how was this issue? This issue was great.
Yeah, it was a great issue. But afterwards, I literally put it down and I was like, that was great. Why is this so annoying me? It's like, oh, it's because it's the same thematic story for the last decade.
And Jason Aaron did it. He did it. Yeah. He finished it. And it was okay that he did it then, because it was only the one time, and then you sort of go back to one. And then we keep going back to wherever we went after that.
When I saw the redesigned hammer, I immediately felt bad for all artists to follow it unless they fix it.
I don't want a redesigned hammer again.
Yeah.
I want the hammer. Like, when they broke the hammer again, I was like, again? I had to watch it get wrecked in the books. I had to watch it get wrecked in the movie. I had to, like, come on. Let him have the hammer. Like, I feel like such like a middle-aged white man. Like, why are you changing things?
For people who didn't read the issue, it's like a wabi-sabi, gold filigree, put the hammer back together that was done by Angela and the Angels of Heaven.
I keep forgetting about Angela, and every time she shows up, I'm like, fuck!
It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, no, it's true. Can I slide aside? I know, it's crazy. Way back when I first met Connor, or I was first sort of becoming friends with Connor at one point, like, he said, I had to go sleep the Odin sleep. And I was like, and I think I fell in love with you that day, because I don't know if I was even reading comics, but I hadn't thought about it, because I read comics from like 10, 11, 12, and I hadn't thought about the old sleep, and I was like, fuck. I think when you said that, you probably don't even remember, but it was the thing you used to say.
It makes sense that I would have said that.
Oh, college. My God.
Because only in college can you truly sleep the old sleep. So.
Oh, my God.
Next issue is 750, and it features Joanna Cates and J. Michael Straczynski and Dan Jurgens and Walter Simonson and Jason Aaron. So that's the big anniversary issue next issue, because Marvel has it both ways.
Yeah, they do. So yeah, this is Thor 749. Why would you want to call it 749? 749 is so much better than 23.
Yeah.
Fine.
Speaking of Norse books,
Thor Corner.
Norse Mythology 2, number Norse Mythology 3, number 2.
This is part 2 of Thor Corner and part 2 of a Thor story. This is the story of Thor and Tyr, the god of war, going fishing with a giant so that they can obtain a giant cauldron for making the best brew in all of the northern realms.
I've forgotten the first part. I feel like, even though these stories have been doing it for all these volumes, maybe they shouldn't go from issue to issue, because I had forgotten the first part totally. But
have either of you read the prose version of this?
No.
Okay.
No.
But I've read every issue of this.
See, I think that helps, because I have the memory of reading the story in prose, even though it's not a perfect memory, but it's enough to like help me remember the framework and the structure of what's happening. I just thought.
But even not remembering it, it still was, you know, the second part was really good.
I thought the David Rubin art was incredible. Yeah. I really, really loved his art on this.
And then the second story with the art from Colleen Doran was also terrific. Hers is more delicate and makes sense because it's Baldur's story, and Baldur's supposed to be the most beautiful god.
Yeah, and the death of Baldur is one of my favorite Asgardian myths, Norse myths in the game. So I just really love that story.
Yeah, nothing can hurt
him. I had a technical issue and was unable to read this one, so I enjoyed it.
It was good. All these books have been good. All of these stories have been good.
There's that issue of Top 10 where they're at the Norse bar. And they keep accidentally killing Baldur over and over again.
Man, that was 20 years ago.
I don't remember. No,
they're like at this bar. It's a bar for all the gods in the top 10 universe, and like it's the Norse gods hanging out, and they're like, let's play the game where we all throw things at Baldur, and the cops get called because it's a murder because he's been killed by the mistletoe. But then, like after a few minutes, Baldur just gets back up because all the stories repeat themselves over and over again. And there's a scene where
that book was terrific.
There's a scene where one of the cops goes into the bathroom. And I will never forget the he had like God themed graffiti on the bathroom stalls. And one of them was one God, son, God, rah, rah, rah. And I thought it was the most hilarious thing I've ever read in a comic. And it's, I hold true to that to this day.
Devil's Reign, Moon Knight. I didn't read this one. I read regular Devil's Reign, in which we got rid of the two Matt Murdock problem, but I did not read this one.
So I read it by accident.
I thought about
because
it.
I thought it was just the next Moon Knight issue. I'm not really reading most of the Devil's Reign stuff. But then after I had it, I looked and I was like, oh, it's Jed McKay. Let's read it. And it's the interesting thing here is that I don't like Moon Knight.
Really?
Which is funny because you read
all of his books.
That's where I'm getting to. And so this is my thing here is that like I don't really like this character. I don't really want to watch another one of these guys in prison. This was really good. Like, I mean, like I read Jed McKay's stuff because I'm always kind of impressed by it. He's not exactly a Tom Taylor, but he's getting to be there in a Marvel sense, I think, where he just gets a really good handle on these characters. And while this is not one of my favorite characters, I just think that the quality and the imagination of the story that's happening here is great. And his characterization of Moon Knight isn't annoying. Like, at least it's consistent and they're sticking with the thing. And then finally, Federico Sabatini, it just, like, the book looks completely different than the regular Moon Knight book.
Yeah.
And I found that very exciting. There was a bit where basically he's in the prison, and I think he decides that his version of him that comes out when he's in prison is it the wild dog, I think. And that becomes the theme of the issue and how he works. And like, that's the Moon Knight the world needs at this moment. And I just thought structurally, thematically, it was very strong storytelling. And also there's a lot of really great visual bits in here where they're constantly going back to the iconography of the mask in interesting ways. I really enjoyed it.
And I liked that he laid out sort of the moral compass of the Marvel universe of just like, I'm not Spider-Man and I'm not the Punisher and that's the spectrum. I'm something else. And like, to me, that actually, if a person said, if I like lived in the 616 and knew all these characters from having lived in this world and someone said that to me, like that would be scary as hell.
Well, and that's the thing is like this character has no superpowers to speak of, and he shouldn't be this powerful or this you know proficient. But I bought that he is in this, and that's the thing. Like,
if you've ever been around a person who's like off, you know, in a way that you can't quite put your finger on, like it's eerie. And I think it's unsettling. That's a perfect word for it. And I think Jed McKay captures that feeling better than a lot of the more recent Moon Knight comics I've read.
I agree.
I want to just tie this back to what the three of us were talking about before the show started. Josh, you're like the guy who eats pizza every day for lunch, is literally eating pizza, is talking with his mouth full and says, I don't really like pizza. You like pizza. You like Moon Knight. You've read the last four Moon Knight series.
Because they all had people I liked. I really liked the one. If somebody was on Moon Knight and I didn't like the person working on it, or I didn't like, I would drop it immediately. But the fact is, the people who have been working on it have been doing intriguing things with it, and that could be enough to keep reading it. But I don't read him out of course. I think I want to like Moon Knight, but I don't generally. Because I don't like the crazy part. I don't like the multiple personality thing. It's also, who did it before this?
There was
that great series with the guy and the other guy. There was that really great series that Jason Burroughs drew, and it was by the guy who had been in the rock band, Max.
Yep.
What's his name?
Yeah. That was just
fantastic.
Yeah.
Then there was a bunch of them that were okay. You know, Warren Ellis and Declan Chavvy came out and they introduced this new version, and that was really good and sort of visually arresting. And obviously, we're still seeing that. Then they moved into Smallwood, and you had Brian Wood for a little bit, and then Jeff Lemire. And I didn't read any of those; I just looked at them.
Jeff Lemire was with Smallwood.
Yeah. No, I swear Brian Wood did some of them.
I just saw this week there was a collection released, the Jeff Lemire, Greg Smallwood Moon Knight collection, and I almost got it because I wanted to see it. So I don't know.
I think maybe
he did both. Maybe he did both of them.
He did. No, he did. Yeah, no. Brian, you had Warren Ellison and Brian Wood, which was like a
No, no, I mean, yeah. Smallwood must have drawn both the runs.
He did. Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah, he drew. Okay. He drew the Brian Wood ones first, and I read the first couple, and I was like, I'm not interested in this. But I looked at it because I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And then Lemire took over, and I never read that.
Okay. You like Moon Knight. We all know it. I'm gonna buy you only Moon Knight material from now on. Every Christmas and holiday.
Well, you really like Moon Knight? No, my friend just buys them for me out of spite. And I don't
Moon
like
Knight statues, Moon Knight action figures, and
the image, the iconography of Moon Knight is great. I do like. I always love the way it looks.
I'm very looking forward to the TV show.
The bright white Batman. It's cool. It's a cool idea.
Naomi season 2, number 1. It's the same creative team from the first series: Brian Bendis, David Walker, Jamal Campbell, Wes Abbott. And I wanted to mention this only because I need this series to make me care about Naomi.
Yeah.
I read the first series. It was fine. It was fun. Then she joined Young Justice, and now she's a member of Justice League, basically whatever Brian Bendis is writing. I even gave her TV show a try. I bailed out after a couple of episodes because it was boring.
I didn't know.
I need a reason. And what I mean is they got to tell a really compelling story. And right now it feels like with this first issue, it's the same story from the first book, which is just she's in her hometown. She's got her family and the guy at the tattoo shop, and they're training her. And so far, nothing compelling about her exists, and I need something to happen.
Well, I know what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think it's just a fish out of water character, but you know, like it's you know, Kyle Rayner or Wally West or whoever, except she's Naomi. And yes, but I think the other side is that I think the art in this is fantastic.
No, it's beautiful.
I know that. I'm just saying, like, if you were to do anything, like Jamal Campbell was a good artist, and I think there's been a level up here in some way. And I did find myself intrigued by the story of what's going on with her dad, because it started off kind of like big deal. And
yeah.
Then at the end of it, it was kind of interesting. I don't think you're going to get what you want, though.
I know. That's the thing is, like, I feel like they're setting up this mystery with her dad. And I love Bendis. I've read Bendis for years. I've read all his indie stuff. I've read the stuff he drew. But it's gotten to the point where when Bendis sets up a mystery, I don't have the confidence that I used to that it's going to pay off in a satisfying way.
Agree.
Well, there's the closet.
The closet hurt. I mean, I know you guys made a joke of it, but like it's you know, there's a there.
It was not a joke. We're deadly serious about the closet.
Okay. Well, yeah, then there's a there. And the fact that it was never paid off is a problem. And that's kind of what I think about whenever he sets up a mystery. I'm just kind of like, well, is this going to be the closet? Like, are you going to lose interest and I'm never going to find out the end of the story?
And I'm not saying you know this. I like this issue. I like the first miniseries. I'm just saying they need to tell a story where at the end of it, I go, shit, Naomi's awesome. As opposed to, that was a good book. But why is she in the Justice League other than because Bendis created her? You know, like.
That's the thing I don't think you're going to get. Because don't think that you're going to think maybe somebody thinks she's awesome and maybe that's what he's going for. He's not trying to make you think she's awesome and maybe that's a problem. Going back to that Bendis thing and the closet. I'm sorry. I feel like it's been long enough. I need to explain it. Bendis killed Hawkeye in secret.
Not like this.
No.
Avengers disassembled.
Disassembled.
Okay. And then brought him back in Avengers number 27, 28. This is a long time ago. And the idea was that he showed up in Wondagore. He had sex with Scarlet Witch.
Wanda. Yeah.
She wakes up and looks in a closet and is like, oh, it's her, right? Not him.
Yeah, it's her, yeah.
And freaks out about something in the closet, and that's the end of the issue. And it was
the POV from inside the closet, so we don't know what she's looking at.
And she gasps. And,
right.
Yeah.
Now, whatever. That's fine. What bothered me about it, and again, we made this into a joke, but what's true is that he didn't address it and wrote it off as like, it's a silly thing. And I think that's bullshit. I would have rather have heard like, yeah, it's a thing, I dropped it, and so we just let it be. But it wasn't that. And what I think that he has a tendency to do, and I don't blame him for it because it's worked out for him, is to go, it's comic books, we'll let it go away. And that's okay for some things, but not in terms of like having a compelling story. I think like he can lean on the idea of it being an ongoing thing and then leave some things that he didn't quite have worked out and move along. I think that's what's going to happen.
I think someone needs to pick it up. Someone should tell the story of the closet now.
It's kind of amazing tradition. That no one did that.
Yeah.
If you think about it, he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Just so everyone understands the length to which we did this, because people who came on recently may not know this. we used to attend all the Marvel press conferences back when we did the website full time. and every Marvel press conference that Bendis was in, when there was a final question, and it was usually Ron because he would do the Bendis ones, Ron would ask about the closet, to the point where Bendis would go, the PR guy would go, okay, final questions, and Bendis would go, okay, Ron, ask me about the closet. Because every time we would ask him, so what's in the closet? And he just wouldn't. And people started bugging him on Twitter, and we didn't advocate that, and I don't want people to do that. But it's just like, what is in the closet, man?
Come on. He got annoyed by it at a certain
point. Yeah, he did. Oh, first he was amused by it, sure. Then he got annoyed by it. And it's been so long, I don't, he's not even at Marvel anymore. Don't even worry about it.
No, and it's not even about the thing. It's about the fact.
No, I'm just talking about people. I don't want people hounding him on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely not. No,
It's all long gone.
So he's put some doubt in us, is the point.
Yeah.
I want to really love Naomi as a character, and they just haven't given me any reason yet. That's all I'm saying.
Fair.
I just wanted to touch base real quick with Mighty Morphin number 17. This is the new story by Matt Groom, picking up where Ryan Parrott left off. And I wasn't sure if I was going to stick with this book just because it was a new creative team. But I have to say, they put together a really compelling first issue of their arc and set forth an interesting challenge where the command center has been destroyed. And so if any damage happens to the Morphin Grid underneath, the Rangers will lose their ability to...
No, there's nothing going on. I'm just doing the show right now. No, this part's not important. And, I'll be down in a second.
So they have to split the team up because they find out that the command center they
had... Did you say the Morphin Grid?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's not important. I'm just telling
the power grid.
I'm just telling the viewers what they needed to know to follow the story.
They're not viewers.
So they find out that the command center they had is actually a standard design, so they can just go to another planet and teleport one home. So half the team goes to do that, and part of the team stays home to defend the grid against people who now realize that the Rangers are vulnerable. And yeah, so far so good. So that's all I want to say.
In my old apartment, I would have taken this time to go make a cup of tea because the kitchen was next to where I recorded, but not anymore.
Listen, I didn't claim any corners or outhouses. I just told people what's happening in the world of the Power Rangers.
I like it. This episode's been spicy. I like it.
We don't get spicy that often.
Well, I'm liking it. I'm enjoying
when you start,
it.
When you start with a London taco, you can only get spicier from there.
Those are the books we want to talk about. Those are the comics we read and wanted to discuss. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. That's called the patron pick. Every patron gets the opportunity. And this week, the overwhelming favorite by a 3-1 margin over the number 2 book was Punisher number 1 from Jason Aaron, Jesus Saez, Paul Azaceta, Dave Stewart, Corey Pettit. And I'm of so many minds about this. And it's frustrating. So the backstory of this is many extremist fringe groups have taken the Punisher symbol as their own.
And not so extremist. There's some mainstream adaptation or adoption as well.
Well, it depends on what your point of view is. And so they've taken Punisher off the grid for a while. Now he's back, and here he has been chosen to lead the hand, and he has a new logo, and he fights with swords instead of guns, and he is a ninja now. And it was all very competently done. The art was great. I especially love the Paul Azaceta flashback opening, cold open. Jason Aaron has written the Punisher a lot. He knows the character. From a pure crafts point of view, this was a fine issue. I hated everything about it. I hate capitulating to bullies. I hate saying, well, they took our thing, so we'll let them have it. I hate it.
If only Marvel was owned by a corporation that had a history of being very litigious against people.
Right. I hate capitulation. I hate it. And I hate that they're changing this character who's been around for so long because of a bunch of assholes. And they made the character demonstrably worse. Therefore, the universe is demonstrably worse. I just hate it. I hate it.
And for people who want more context on the issue, there's a good 99% Invisible episode that has a lot of Jerry Duggan talking about his feelings on what has happened, and it all predates this issue coming out.
Oh, really? I think
it's, yeah.
I'd listen to that. I'd know about that. That's
you should. Good. It's good.
So that said, I get what you're saying, and I remember if we go way back to the Marvel Knights days, I don't remember who did it, but it basically turned Punisher into an avenging angel.
Yeah.
You wrote that?
That was terrible. I'll look it up while you talk.
Is that Ennis?
It's considered to be... No. Ennis came on and did like the
He did the Back to Basics.
Okay.
Yeah, he did the
Max series.
Him and Dylan... No, not Max.
It was regular Punisher, and then it went to Max later.
Okay.
Right. I mean, he created Max is what it was. But either way, like, that was the, when they did that last movie, it was that, but they didn't do it well. This is a much better produced piece of work than that was. And all right,
sorry, it was Christopher Golden and Thomas E. Sinigowski, and it was penciled by Bernie Wrightson.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and Paul Meade inked it. Yeah, he had died and he came back as a vigilante angel character.
Taken on its own, though, and taking all that context out of it, like, I didn't hate this story.
No, it was fine. I totally agree.
It was really well done. I think, you know, you spend the whole time going, why is he doing this? And then at the end, like, the explanation for why he's doing this, and this is your spoiler, is that they have brought back his dead wife, you know, and she's been revived, and she's got bullet scars, which I thought was a really wonderful, you know.
It's a very Jason Aaron choice.
Very Jason Aaron, you know, like, and that was the, I went, okay, that makes sense that why he'd do that. Like, that makes sense why he'd do that. And it makes, you know, I did think, you know, he had kids.
That was good. That was my thought. I was like, what about the kids?
Because, you know, I have kids and, you know, just the wife. I mean, it sounds like a nice vacation, but I feel like I'd have a hard time being like, oh, we can sleep together now because your kids are dead. So maybe
as we've established in this episode, like, Josh has still got it.
God, I hate that I said that. I said it like as a joke, but now it sounds not like a joke. And anyway, here we are. Like I couldn't tell you. Like, no, I was only kidding. You're like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, fanboy Wikipedia page. Canonically, it was episode 820.
I'm just saying, if you're gonna have something in your wiki, I got to tell you how much I did enjoy the splash page of all the different images of the Punisher.
Oh, that was terrific.
That was great.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best page turns of the week. I just like, oh, I'm looking at this forever. I was like, there's
Yeah,
Dylan,
so the opening was a flashback to the, you know, his family getting shot. I thought it was great because it was also very disorienting and a lot of close-ups and great Paul Essaceta art. And then you turn the page great. And it's this double page history, basically history of the Punisher from his first appearance cover shot.
It was also a little disorienting because, like, I knew this was the issue where they were getting rid of the symbol. And so, like, to have that page turn and just be like, blast you in the face with all of the cool art iterations of the different ways they've drawn it over the years. I was like, well, this is a weird way to, like, both lean in and lean out. I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mike Zeck, even the Jim Lee stuff looks so great here. And
I think there's a Goran Parlov
Dylan.
In here.
Brad
oh yeah, there
Street.
Definitely is. Yeah, from the Vietnam story.
Yeah, that was.
And, yeah.
Again, I don't really like Punisher all that much.
John Romita Jr. And there's a lot of Steve Dillon.
Yeah,
it's so good to look at. Who drew the earliest ones? The Jerry Conway written.
Tim Bradstreet's on cover.
Anyway, it just made me so happy. It was just like, here's comic book history. And it's like, oh yes.
Did I say Jerry Duggan earlier when I was talking about NIP? I meant Jerry Conway. I misspoke.
Jerry Conway.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Josh.
I thought they just found a random comic
book. No,
no. Not random, but
yeah,
you know.
Yes, thank you for correcting me on that.
It's an understandable mistake. So, you know, I thought it looked great. Jesus Saez, I'm pronouncing it wrong, I'm sure. He's like a jack of all trades. Like, he can kind of do anything.
He can do a lot of styles. Yeah.
And depending on, like, it always kind of looks like him, but also kind of looks like nobody. And depending on how they produce it, I think the coloring in this, which is a kind I wouldn't normally like, I think worked really well.
It gave it a lot of texture.
Dave
it
Stewart.
Reminds, yeah. But it reminds me of, oh God, he died recently. And he did, Corbin, Richard Corbin. It reminds me, it was produced to look like Richard Corbin work, but drawn by Saez.
What's interesting is if you didn't tell me who did this, I would never in a million years say this was Dave Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I didn't. I actually didn't know because I didn't remark on it. So I wouldn't. Wow. Which, by the way, how talented is that guy?
Right.
That he can switch because he's got a thing he does. And it's so good that why would you want to do something else? But
I think Dave Stewart's legend status is well established.
I know, but he just added to it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's great.
Look at this shot on there's a double page spread with the helicopters coming in, page 17 in your digital readers. You know, like, look at the coloring and the mist and the contrast of the greens and the red. And then he's that stark black and white in the middle. Like,
yeah,
you know, visually is. Now I see why it's Dave Stewart. Like, he's the guy who can do that stuff. But it, you know, works with the art and the composition too. I gotta say, like, it felt like a good Jason Aaron story.
Yeah,
You know, again, take out the context of anything. I wasn't really thinking about any of that other stuff when I read it, and Connor's not wrong, but I enjoyed it. And
like I said, as a story, like take away, it's a good story.
Yeah.
It's one of the better Jason Aaron stories in a while.
Yes.
He really writes the Punisher. I mean, I'll call you out here. You said, oh man, Jason Aaron again. But the thing is, he writes the Punisher really well. And this is no different.
Yeah. I don't mean Jason Aaron again.
I totally understand. You're like, wait, he's coming back to Punisher? Because it'd be like his third stint on the Punisher. People,
they do their thing on it and then they go away.
Yeah.
And because they did their thing. And sometimes they come back and you know, good. But he did the thing. Paul Azaceta, I forgot about him. He's awesome.
Oh, he's so good. He's been over at least for a while. He was doing that Kirkman book and Image.
Yeah,
so
yeah. The Cinemax show.
But the opening was just so visceral. Mm-hmm. You know, and this people complain about retelling origins. I don't necessarily, but this is a great way to do it. Where you know it's from a different point of view. It's literally Frank's point of view. You know, like he's mm-hmm. it's the flashes of imagery. The EMTs, the cops, his bloody hand reaching for his wife. His wife full of bullet holes, and it was very very. You know, raw. And then you cut to the history of Punisher, and it's just a great storytelling.
Yeah, and it's not like a. It's funny whenever Marvel does something like this, it always looks like someone with not great Photoshop skills has put together a montage very quickly. But the power of the art within it was so good that I didn't, you know, I was like, nope, it made me feel a thing immediately. And you can stare at it. I could stare at this longer than I spent reading many of the books that I read this week, and it's just this little history of comics. So yeah, no, it's, and I saw the symbol on his chest there as he goes and becomes the Avenging Angel, and his swords, and I went, oh, it's with the hand, you know, and so that made sense to me in comic book terms. I think it's about as well done as you could make it, but also I would also think of this as a temporary thing, like make it for this miniseries or whatever, but don't keep it like this. But that's, I don't know that that's going to happen.
Yeah. So I think this is another 5-issue miniseries.
It'd be great if all of the trucks ended up with the hand thing on their, on their trucks instead. I would buy that. I would be like, oh, okay. Yeah, that works. Then they switch back in here and we get our comic back.
This is going to be interesting. Let's do ratings on Punisher number one. Ratings.
I don't want to go first.
I will. I'm rating this on a reading experience of the craft of the work and how much I enjoyed reading the story, and versus my expectations. I don't expect to like Punisher stories usually, so I'm going to go 4.25.
I'm going to give it a 4 and a 0.
Feels like a cheat.
So average that. That would be average that out to.
I feel like if I did that, you could say you can't do that.
two.
That's a two.
No, it isn't. It's a 0.
Well, yeah. 0 is powerful.
What's the middle between 0 and 4? It's 2.
It's not a middle. The average of 4 and 0 is 0.
The median between 0 and 4 is 2. Statistically, is it? I think so. Mm-hmm.
Isn't the median between 4 and 1 2?
I don't think so.
I don't know math.
No, it'd be this is statistics. Between 4 and 1 would be 2.5.
We don't have PhDs on here a lot, so I'm going to go ahead and recuse myself.
Oh, you know what, Josh? I meant to tell you. I thought about this last night. You really called me out the other episode. I think it's Dr. Hout for the rest of the episode for you.
You did? What did I do?
You got real salty about me. And so, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I am Dr. Haupt to you. Connor, you can still call me Ryan.
Fuck off, Ryan from Santa Cruz.
3.75 for me.
This is a fun episode.
It was
I'm enjoying
my GPA.
I'm enjoying the show.
It's 3.86.
Those are the books we're going to talk about. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Everyone can vote to add a book to the rundown. Let's talk quickly about how you help support the show. We're already long. I'm not surprised. We did 10 minutes in the beginning of the show on, I don't even remember anymore. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's the main way to help support the show. You can unlock content for everybody. You can become part of a great community. We have monthly hangouts. We have a Discord server. It's a lot of fun. We have our stretch goals. And last week we told you about the media explode and how we fell below that stretch goal. And so the media explodes were in jeopardy. We have gone back above it. So probably comfortably enough that we'll definitely have a media explode this month. Going forward, we'll have to keep our eye on it. But you can probably look forward to a media explode now, considering that we've got above it. So thanks to everybody who supports the show through that. Everybody who – and we have heard from a lot of people who wanted the media explode enough to either join up or to up their contribution. And so we're
a group of stalwarts, good people, true and loyal all.
So now we have to come up with some topics. Fanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. You can also get those designs and other things, but it's mainly a t-shirt store. And we have 12 designs. They're all dumb jokes from the show. We all love them. Josh is currently wearing his GDAT shirt right now.
Right now.
And so what does that mean? It's a dumb inside joke. And if you know, you know.
It's so dumb.
And so it's not even a joke.
I don't know what it is.
So there you go. Those are all there. I own several of them, and I love them all. Fanboy.com/support. I think I must own them all. I must own one of each. Fanboy.com/support. That's our PayPal tip jar. And if anyone who doesn't want to be a patron but wants to help the show out, doesn't want to buy a t-shirt, is an eccentric billionaire, maybe you own a baseball team and you just got a favorable deal yesterday and you have a little extra cash, you can throw it in fanboy.com/support. Finally, fanboy.com/Amazon. That's our link for the Booksplode books. And there's also a general link there. And finally, bookshop.org. We partner with them. And you can find those links on appropriate posts, usually just the Booksplode posts. But if you want to help local bookstores, that's the best way to do it. That's how I order my books now, is through bookshop.org. You can designate a shop to support, or you can just go into the general fund to help support local bookstores, locally owned small bookstores. And so it's a great organization. Those are all the ways you can help support the show. We thank everyone who does that. And again, patreon.com/iFanboy is the best way to help, because if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show, your own patron superpower that hopefully is not a repeat of a previous one, but sometimes is, because there's been like 800 of them.
Did I do that?
We've all done it.
Oh, I've done it.
We've all repeated several times.
That's fine. Well, we all
there was once you did it three times in a row. Remember you gave a guy four powers?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying to Ryan earlier, is that people will talk to me about things I said on the show, and I'm like, oh, I don't remember what I said on the show. I have no recollection. Like, somebody said the other day, somebody quoted something I said on the show, and I was like, that sounds familiar, and I didn't know what it referred to, and it was when I was talking about my dog, and it was like, no one liked him in person, and I went, what is that? I had to think about it for like a long time. Anyway, Sea Bear.
They got mixed up.
Whom I'd like to hug.
They got mixed up.
Seems. All right. Sea Bear can speak to people and be generally interested in what they're talking about.
Wow. That's huge.
Like, across the board.
Like, even if they're talking about like sports?
Just whatever it is, he can be genuinely, he's engaged, he wants to know what they have to say, they come away from it. Also, when he walks away from conversations, he doesn't think, oh my God, what an asshole I am. It's none of that. Sea Bears can be genuinely interested. Now, he doesn't stay, someone doesn't come in and talk to him about, you know, the traffic on a bridge in their part of town for a while and how it's rushing. He doesn't walk away and stick with it. But at the time when the person is talking to them, he is interested in it, and the person feels that engagement, and it makes them very happy.
So Seabird's just a nice person.
Yeah, but it's like a fantasy.
He's like Ted Lasso.
Yeah, there you go, fantasy.
he's constantly being like, you just met a really cool person.
Yeah. Think how happy that makes him.
Yeah.
As opposed to say the opposite.
No self-loathing.
I feel like I'm talking about myself now. I don't think I meant to.
Jonathan Breen, and this might be a duplicate, but I don't care. Jonathan Breen, his superhero name is Brain Freeze, because he can instigate brain freeze and control its intensity.
In himself or others?
In himself and anyone else.
Why would he use himself?
Well, if he got brain freeze, he could lower it. He can bring it down.
Do other animals get brain freeze?
Why are you asking us?
I don't know.
ask one of your nerd friends.
Now I'm thinking about like intracranial vascularization. And
that's a topic for your own podcast. All right, fine. There you go.
Do animals get brain freeze? Based on no knowledge, but we're all basically constructed the same, they must.
But what other what animals eat food that's that much colder than their
what
body?
What animals
temp?
Are eating ice cream?
That's the bit. Like, if you're an animal who's in the Arctic and you're used to being, you know, cold, frozen shit all the time, probably less so because of, you know, evolution. But if you gave, like, an ice cream cone to, like, a howler monkey in Thailand, yes.
There you go. I like that. Howler monkeys, New World monkey, don't live in Thailand, but I see where you're going.
You know what I'm saying. I did that before.
They also,
don't know where monkeys live.
Experimentally, Arctic foxes, they have not been able to experimentally get them to shiver. They cannot get that animal cold enough that it ever even shivers, which is incredible.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is an amazing fact. Thank God we have you here. How many schools years did you have to go to get that?
That was something I learned pretty late in the PhD process. I'm not going to lie. I had to get through most of it before.
Oh, he's a doctor, everyone. Listen up.
Ooh, a doctor. Oh,
everyone, listen to the big doctor.
Listen, don't date a doctor. We're famously poor. That's a Zoidberg quote. Liam Landrum. Right. I have not looked to see if... Connor, we get it. You want to move it along. It's fine. Liam Landrum. I haven't looked up to see if this is a duplicate power or not, but... Are you guys familiar with the Reddit "Am I the Asshole" thread?
Yes.
So Liam Landrum, whenever he's in a disagreement with anyone, the person who is the asshole starts to glow, and they keep glowing until the situation is resolved.
What if he's the asshole? He glows.
Yep, he glows until the situation is resolved. So like, doesn't matter who. It could even be with like a world leader, you know, like some sort of a foreign invader. If he got in an argument with them about whether or not what they were doing was right, they would glow, and they would glow continuously, and the intensity would increase until the situation resolved itself.
It's like Diana's lasso of truth.
Yeah, exactly.
That is definitely not a repeat. Okay. And I think that's the best one you've ever done.
Thank you.
If he talked to C-Bear at a party, then he probably would glow.
Well, C-Bear is
I feel like C-Bear's power would actually cancel out anyone glowing, because C-Bear
no
is such
be
a
ass, no one would be the asshole.
C-Bear is such like a genuinely positive influence in any environment that they're in,
and it's subjective to the person that C-Bear is talking to. So in that instance, they're not they can't be the asshole.
Neither person is being the asshole, because Liam is being genuine and talking about what they're interested in, and C-Bear is being genuine. So like the fact that they're both being genuine means that nobody's being the asshole. It's the
here's how C-Bear could get into trouble. Okay, he's out there, he's at a party, he spots Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she's telling him a bunch of shit, and he's like, really? Yeah, I never saw it that way. A little video of that goes up, C-Bear's canceled.
Okay.
I don't think we have time for questions.
I don't think we do either. But contact@fanboy.com is the email for the audience questions, and also for the media explode. If you're writing it for the media explode, please put it in the title, but... Thanks to those who've written in, and we're sorry we had to skip the questions, but we had a long time in the beginning about, again, what was it in the beginning?
Literally none of us remember.
No, I do, because I'm going to hear about it.
From who?
One time I made
a joke. That's right.
One time I made a joke that was worth about, it. I made a joke about Alan Rickman being an ugly man on Twitter.
That's insane.
He's a weird looking dude. No. What I said was, I actually remember the context. The context
Bill Clay
was,
himself?
That lady in Love Actually would not be super attracted to that man. And
he's
the
very
next
charming.
Morning, he's extremely charming, and he's a great actor, and I miss him dearly. And that's not the point. I said, offhanded, I had a thought, wrote it on Twitter, lost my
and
job.
And that is the downfall of Twitter.
That's why
lives from out from under them.
Not the point. The point is, I woke up in the morning, and there were a group of women in the UK who were like all Alan Rickman super fans, and they all fucking came after me with reckless abandon.
Yeah.
They were so angry at me, and I did not know that there were large groups of angry Alan Rickman super fans, and it was weird. So, yeah.
And that's why everyone should be on Twitter.
There's a famous person married to one of the secondary or tertiary Hemsworths, right?
Well...
She's gonna
for a
come
while,
after me. That's my point.
For a while, Miley Cyrus was. I don't even know why
Liam.
I know these things.
Yeah, her and Liam.
Yeah, there you go.
But they're not married.
Well,
like we're at the age where we're annoyed that we know who Miley Cyrus is.
I hear
is.
She comes in like a wrecking ball.
I'm not annoyed. She's
terrible.
A great singer.
You are a dad. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I have dad powers now.
How are we? Okay, so here's the plugging part of the show, the part that everyone tunes out for. We had here's shows that came out in the last month. We had a lot of extra shows in the past month. We've had, I think, one every week. It's been a lot. So been 8 shows in the last 8 weeks. So we had Josh's Talksplode, Will Dennis Part 2, the 100th episode of Talksplode. Good job, Josh.
Hey, congratulations.
Thanks. I didn't do all of them.
You didn't do all of them, but you did probably 90 of them.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
So Part 2 is Will Dennis interview.
A big chunk in the first quarter or so.
Yeah, I was on the first one. That was the Paul. No, the first one was...
Remender.
No, the first one was a name you would be surprised to know.
Okay.
The guy Ron really liked that image.
Oh, Jay Ferber?
Jay Ferber.
Go read Next Wave to find out why all these things are called Splode.
Anyway, Talksplode 100, Will Dennis Part 2. Also,
Jimsky said something was Splode.
It came from Next Wave. Jimsky said it in his column. We took it as a branding for the website, and that's history. Nice. And people who know what we're talking about know what we're talking about. Other people are like, those words don't make any sense when you put them in a row. Booksplode, the new Teen Titans, the Judas contract, Josh and I just talked about two weeks ago. A lot of fun discussing that. Spent a lot of time talking about George Perez and why he's so good in that book. And then just a couple of days ago, we had the special edition review of The Batman, in which Mike Romo and our buddy Hank Nazarbach talked about it. And I thought it was a really good discussion. It was almost an hour long. And we had a really good time talking about that. And also The Bad Behavior at Hank's Theater. Spent a lot of time on that as well. Coming up this week is our review of Catwoman Hunted. Ryan is on that show. And Paul Montgomery is on that show, The Animation Brain Trust. We recorded it like 3 weeks ago, but because we had so many shows, it got bumped. It's coming out this week. It's the most recent DC Universe animated original film.
Boy, was
and
it.
And then the week after that, so you're still getting a show every week. A week after that will be now The Media Explode, because we got back above the level. It'll be our pre-Oscar show. It won't be the whole show, but part of the show will be about the Oscars. And that'll be coming out in 2 weeks. And then I think April. Yeah. Oh. In April, I think we're going to have a Booksplode and a Talksplode, so we get back on schedule.
I am recording my Talksplode next week.
Right, so you'll be all set. You'll be ahead of the schedule.
Yeah.
I think we're going to do...
It's the March Talksplode, though, technically.
Right, that's what we got to get back on schedule. We're going to get back on schedule. And then I think we're going to do a contract with God. The three of us are going to do the Booksplode on that. So that'll be all coming out at some point.
I did do most of these Talksplodes.
Speaking of Booksplodes, my podcast, Science Sort Of, we just recorded, we're calling it Science Sort Of Book Club. We did a Hail Mary episode where we just discussed the book Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. A book I know both of you have read.
Loved it.
And we just had a really good discussion about it with Joe and Tim, so I'm looking forward to putting that out. I saw in doing that discussion, I stumbled across the casting announcement for Ryland Grace. Would either of you like to guess who they have cast as Ryland Grace?
I'm assuming it's not Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
No, not Matt Damon.
Ryan Gosling.
It is Ryan Gosling. I was going to say, not even a Matt Damon type. Wow, you got it in two, Connor. That's incredible.
Wow, that is.
We decided that casting was wrong and think that Charlie Day would be a much better Ryland Grace.
Well, the thing is, no, I think Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gosling can be very funny and manic. If you've seen The Other Guy,
I have seen The Other Guy.
Russell Crowe?
Nice Guys.
Nice Guys.
Yeah.
Incredibly funny and manic in that movie.
I don't think of Ryland Grace as manic. He's a little bit funny. I see him as sort of quiet and awkward, and then getting excited. This is.
He's not the best character in that novel. I think we all know who the best character is, but we can't say it because it's a spoiler. Yeah.
No, don't.
So yeah, that's what's coming up in my world.
Rick Remender was on so many Talksplodes.
Yes, he was on a lot.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was reading through the Talksplodes. Say, listen, you can find all of these shows over at ifanboy.com as well. All the ones that I'm talking about, I'm looking through. If you go over to podcast/audio/special edition, you will see all of these Talksplodes that we have done over the years. And I forgot there was a period where I was doing, like, I was doubling up. I was like, all right, I did two and three people at a time about making comics. I'm very proud of that work. But all these people who had been on the show. Anyway, that's all there. And all the old writing is there. You can search Jimsky's things and find the first instance of him mentioning a splode of some kind on the show, which was, of course, taken from Next Wave, of which I have the page from the first issue on my wall in front of me. I'm very proud of it. You can follow at iFanboy on Twitter or at iFanboy Comics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, so you are prepared. You can follow us individually. Connor and I are on Instagram at C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan, along with Ryan Haupt there, and he's just plain old Haupt on Twitter. He's still hanging on. How long are you planning on hanging on Twitter? You still okay with it?
Science Twitter is actually pretty good. So,
that's good.
Yeah. I really enjoy the science Twitter sphere that I kind of orbit. And
so that hasn't been ruined. I guess, the scientists haven't split as much as the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, like, how academia is terrible and we should all leave. So there's, you know, it's not without
it. But where would you go?
To the nonprofit sector, which is where I have gone.
Fair enough. I was like, I don't have time for this conversation.
Yeah, it's fine.
Subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy, and you will see all the old full-length video shows are up. The minis are still going up. Those are our short form. This past week, Superman versus Batman, : The Debate Continues, which sounds like an Always Sunny title. and then My Friend Dahmer, which is a wonderful graphic novel.
There's also a wonderful film adaptation of that novel.
Yeah. Durf did the great graphic novel about Jeffrey Dahmer.
It was his high school classmate, which was...
Yeah, yeah. Also, I think I talked to him, I don't know if I just emailed with him and we put him on the show, but for a guy who does creepy comics, like, he's a really genuinely nice dude. I remember
I don't
that
think he was on the show. I think
I definitely like corresponded with him at some point. And
I just checked, and 6% of all Toxplodes are Rick Remender.
That would mean six. That was easy math for you to do today, Connor.
It was.
So, and those are all, Ron is on all those. Sometimes we doubled up back in the old days.
Yeah.
But I would say I did 80% of the Toxplodes.
Jay Ferber was the first Toxplode. There was a pre-Jay Ferber interview we did with Paul Cornell that wasn't labeled Toxplode.
Right.
But so technically you could say Paul Cornell was for some, the first officially branded Toxplode is Jay Ferber.
And I'm Ryan. Sorry. Did I nail it?
Hey, if you like the show, please consider leaving a review. Please don't mention any Hemsworth in your review.
No, two. First person to mention Hemsworth in a review, we'll send you a surprise.
I mean, we're going to get 0 stars from Hemsworth fans, and we all love the Hemsworth brothers.
It's a bit, people. It's a bit.
Don't, if you're a super Hemsworth, if you're a super Luke Hemsworth fan, let this one
go. There 100% are.
Review next week's
episode.
There's a weird
Facebook group, and they're all aggrieved that he's not the star. I guarantee it.
So please consider a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends, your mom, your kid. Tell Luke Hemsworth. And then when he gets in touch with us, I will put him in touch with Josh.
People with annoying stickers on their vehicles about how they are.
Help
enough.
Us spread the love. Thanks. I would just like to point out, if you are a big fan of the Hemsworths or Luke in general and you're mad at Josh, you can't get him on Twitter anymore. It's some nice lady in England has his old Twitter handle, so don't go coming at her.
Does she?
Yeah. That's and nice. You can't get to him. He's insulated.
Yeah, it's true.
So
you all broke me already. I had to get the fuck out. So,
you know, if you want to write an angry email, maybe we'll do it on the show. But just point your howitzers at Josh.
But the idea of me, you can't point them actually at me.
Right. Unless maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe your neighbor's super into Luke Hemsworth.
No,
I'm sure he's got
no I'm going around through my neighbor.
Guys, I have to edit this. Can we? Come on.
Thanks for listening to this week's show. I'm
Connor, what are you going to have for lunch?
Tacos.
Oh, that's so good.
British tacos?
Ryan,
or?
Tell me about tacos
going to England
in Washington.
Tacos.
I'm going to tell.
I'm doing an England taco.
I'm going to tell everyone that my name is Ryan. Put chili on your spaghetti. Top it with cheese. See you next week.
I'm Josh. My conscience, mistrust, and regret. Courageous, just like the captain, marching forward with no doubt in his head. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.